Facts allow you to make decisions in unpredictable times. Get the facts you need from the Wall Street Journal. From free coronavirus updates to daily deep dives in our podcasts and videos, WSJ is a trusted source in uncertain times. Visit WSJ.com.
This is your tech news briefing for Monday, May 18th. I'm Kateri Yoakum for the Wall Street Journal. Today, we're going to talk about the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, or DMCA. It's a law from the 90s that protects copyright on the internet. If you think someone's plagiarized your story or used your music, you can flag it to Google or another search engine, and they will remove it from their search results. But a new Wall Street Journal report shows that many of those copyright claims are fraudulent themselves. And as a result, Google has been removing content that might be unflattering, but is perfectly lawful. Our reporter Andrea Fuller will join us to explain. That's coming up after these headlines. The Trump administration is taking more steps to cut off the Chinese telecom giant Huawei. The Commerce Department announced a new rule on Friday. It requires all semiconductor manufacturers that use U.S. software and technology to get a license before shipping products to Huawei. The restrictions are designed to essentially shut Huawei out of global supply chains over the U.S.'s concern that China could use Huawei technology for global espionage. Huawei has repeatedly denied those allegations. SoftBank will be reporting its results for the 2019 fiscal year this morning. The company has already told investors to expect a $17 billion write-down, in large part due to major losses in its Vision Fund. The fund invested about half of its assets in just seven companies, several of which had extreme losses. We're talking here about several rideshare companies that have suffered during the pandemic, and of course, we all remember WeWork. Our reporter Rolf Winkler says the Vision Fund took a particularly risky approach from the beginning.
There are basically two classes of investors that invest in private technology companies. Venture capitalists are a big group of them, and they typically make smaller investments in very young companies that may not even have a product yet or barely have a business plan. And they're betting on a guy, a smart man or woman who they think are just going to build a big business. Most of those investments go to zero, or many of them do. But one out of a bunch is a grand slam, and that makes your fund. So that's half of the world. The other half of the world is growth investors. They'll write much bigger checks into more mature companies that have a business model, lower risk. What SoftBank, what the Vision Fund did, is it wrote growth-sized checks into venture capital-type companies, ones that didn't yet have a mature business model. So in a sense, you're adding risk upon risk. You're putting more money into riskier companies. And oh, by the way, they did it at very high valuations. Again, these are private companies. They're illiquid, so they don't have an easy exit. And by the way, they encourage them to grow really quickly, to grab market share and not worry about profitability. Add all this up and you basically have an incredibly risky strategy that, unless things are going to go really well, doesn't really leave you a good margin of safety in case things go poorly.
SoftBank had planned to raise money for a second Vision Fund, but after the debacle that was the first one, key investors have been pulling out. Many analysts will be looking for clues about what's next in today's disclosure.
Bottom line is, it's not really a question of what they're going to be doing in the future, the Vision Fund, in terms of the types of investments they're going to be making. They might not have much of a future. Maybe they're going to give us some updates on that. Maybe they're going to dial back their expectation for it. But it's really an open question if this strategy can even continue.
That was our reporter, Rolf Winkler. Facebook is buying Giphy for a reported $400 million. It says the popular GIF-sharing platform will become part of Instagram's operations, but did not go into specifics. Facebook did say, however, that Giphy will continue to run its library of GIFs and digital stickers. And Google could be looking at an antitrust lawsuit soon. We report that the Justice Department and a group of state attorneys general are likely to bring cases against the search giant later this year, and that they're well into the process of planning litigation. The groups have been investigating Google's dominant position in the online advertising business and looking into whether they rank search results to stifle competition. Both investigations are ongoing, and no final decisions have yet been made. But speaking of Google, some people are fooling the company into removing perfectly lawful content from its search results. We'll talk about how they're doing it after the break.
When the world is at a standstill, facts can move us forward. Facts help us make decisions and bring us together even as we're apart. The Wall Street Journal has the facts in these uncertain times. Get the latest on the coronavirus outbreak with free coverage of the crisis and its impact on the economy, politics, culture, and daily life. Find the clarity you need with America's most trusted news source. Visit WSJ.com and stay informed.
Back in the 1990s, when the internet became public, people used to share all sorts of information, from perfectly legal things like email to more illicit content like pirated copies of movies and music, media that would otherwise be protected by copyright law. Enter the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, or DMCA. It became law in 1998, and it granted tech companies immunity from copyright cases so long as they took down materials quickly when they got complaints. 1998 is the same year that Google was founded, so naturally it set up its systems to comply with the DMCA. But now, a Wall Street Journal analysis has found that people appear to be manipulating Google's system and leading the company to take down lawful content as opposed to just copyright infringements. Our reporter Andrea Fuller has been looking into this, and she joins us now. Andrea, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
All right. So tell us about how people have found ways to manipulate Google's system. What kind of articles and links are being removed under these phony DMCA claims?
Yeah, absolutely. So we found in particular a lot of negative news content. It's getting suppressed this way. Google's pretty good about, you know, not taking down Wall Street Journal articles, but all of these requests for more obscure online sites and international media sites or even some local newspapers have slipped through the system. And Google's taken down negative articles about people accused of attempted rape or fraud or Ukrainian politicians who have allegedly participated in financial corruption. And these things have been taken down from Google search, which effectively means people can't find them unless they have that link to go to the website. You can't find it on the internet. And that's a really concerning thing for the public good.
So just to be clear, are these articles, how are they being flagged under this copyright infringement law?
Yeah, so that's the crazy part. They're not actually copyright violations, but people are using this copyright law to get negative content removed. So what's happening is someone sees an article that they don't like, and then they create their own copy, backdate it, pretend it was written earlier, and then they ultimately file this complaint to Google, and they ask Google to remove the real article, saying, hey, we wrote this, not this other person, and then Google falls for it. Google's systems that do this, it's heavily automated, and so there isn't, in many cases, a human reviewing these, and stuff is definitely slipping through the cracks.
How did your team figure this out? What kind of methodology did you use?
Well, it was quite difficult, if I do say so myself. Google has all of these requests, and they share them in the spirit of openness with Harvard researchers. And so we were able to, with programming and whatnot, obtain this data from the Harvard researchers and cross-reference it with some other Google data and ultimately determine what got taken down. We spent a lot of time trying to find as many fraudulent requests as we could, and we sent Google several hundred requests that we believed to be fraudulent based on our independent research. And Google actually used those and not only restored more than 400 requests that we had sent them, but actually used that information, because they have obviously a lot more information about the senders at their disposal, to restore 52,000 links that they had improperly removed.
Wow. Do we have any idea or understanding about why these specific articles, you said they were negative content, but why were they being targeted? It feels like a lot of work to have gone to.
It's certainly a lot of work. It's not actually clear who is behind the request. You can probably make assumptions in some cases, but they'll submit requests with phony names. You know, I talked to people who pretended to be real journalists, and then I would talk to the real journalist, and they said they didn't submit the request. So there's not a vetting on your identity when you submit a request. But ultimately, there's an incentive to want to scrub negative content on the web, whether it's about your company or criminal activity. You know, in our story, we include a lawyer who, under his name, he wasn't actually a lawyer. He was accused of running a fake law firm despite not actually having legal credentials. He submitted all these DMCA requests. Google fell for it. Ultimately, these are people who presumably just don't want this stuff out there. And this is how they get it taken down.
Now, Google is probably one of the most powerful businesses in the world. And as you know, you pointed out, they have a huge system, but it sounds like it's very automated. Is that the explanation for all these instances of fraudulent claims slipping through the cracks?
By and large, yes. Our reporting showed that, you know, Google only has about 100 people worldwide working on a team that deals with these. And Google receives hundreds of millions of DMCA requests a year. By and large, they're from media companies, people pirating Game of Thrones and whatnot, which are completely legitimate. But because of the sheer volume of requests, and in the early years, they received a couple hundred requests total. Like, that's it. And now they're receiving a million a day. They're receiving on the order of 500 million requests a year. And it's not possible for humans to go through all of those. So the lack of human review contributes to people being able to manipulate the system. And when we pointed out specific cases to Google, they restored them, including the examples in our story from the fake lawyer to the Ukrainian politicians.
Yeah, I mean, that the next question I have is, of course, how is Google responding to this reporting?
Well, they have definitely taken action, yes, in 52,000, restoring more than 52,000 links that they found. That said, you know, this is continuing to be a problem even in the coronavirus era. This is something we've been reporting on for a while, but in recent weeks, we found that in March, a Vietnamese newspaper wrote a post about two anonymous tourists and how they had coronavirus and listing all the bars and restaurants, the hotel they visited, and Google took it down based on a phony DMCA request. So this is an ongoing issue, you know, that has actually gone back. Some of the ones that we found that had been taken down were taken down years ago. And for years, they've been hidden from Google. And the crazy part is that people don't always know their stuff has been taken down. Several of the people that we talked to had no idea that Google had removed links to their articles.
So we're talking about a decades-old law, and this was all enacted before the dot-com bubble burst. The U.S. Copyright Office, as I understand, is now conducting a review of the DMCA. How could their review and your reporting impact future legislation in this area?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, this is codified law. This is how it works. Basically, DMCA sets up a process that says tech companies are immune from legal prosecution for hosting copyrighted content if they follow this procedure where they respond to valid complaints and take down content. That law, as you said, was written in 1998, and there's been a lot of pushback from academics and researchers and people in this community who say this was written in a different era. We need to force the tech companies to do more to weed out these fraudulent requests. The tech companies on the whole saying the system is working, they're going to be bad actors, but on the whole, the system is working. The requests are by and large legitimate, and this is the best option.
All right. Andrea Fuller, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right. Before you go, we are still collecting your work from home tech stories and questions this week. Our senior personal tech columnist, Joanna Stern, will be back on Friday to share her best tips and solutions. You can call us and leave us a voice message at the number in the description, or you can email Joanna at joanna.stern@wsj.com. And that was your tech news briefing. I'm Kateri Yoakum from The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.